Thank you for joining us here on the Radio Bible Course for our study of Galatians. We have come to verse 6 in our study, verse 6 of chapter 2, where context is Paul's visit to Jerusalem, where he defended the gospel of grace, that it was not necessary to live by the law of Moses in order to be saved, nor was it necessary to participate in any kind of a ritual, particularly circumcision, which some of the Jewish teachers were pushing on the Gentiles who had believed in Galatia, that is. And Paul in verse 5 said to them, "We did not yield submission even for a moment, that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you." And now, verse 6, "And from those who were reputed to be something, what they were makes no difference to me. God shows no partiality. Those, I say, who were of repute added nothing to me. But on the contrary, when they saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised," that's a word referring to the Gentiles, "just as Peter had been entrusted with the gospel to the circumcised," that refers to the Jews, and the reason Paul uses these words is because that's what the argument was about, whether circumcision was necessary. Circumcision was a practice of the Jews, but not of the Gentiles. So Paul is using those words deliberately to call attention to the practice that these false teachers were promoting among the new Christians. And so he continues in verse 8, "For he who worked through Peter for the mission to the circumcised worked through me also for the Gentiles. And when they perceived the grace that was given to me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. Only they would have us remember the poor, which very thing I was eager to do." What Paul is expressing here is that the highest of the apostles, the ones who had the best reputation, they were Peter, James, and John. They were leaders in the early church. He said, "When I went to Jerusalem and met with them, they couldn't find anything wrong with my doctrine. They saw that I was teaching the grace of God and that God's grace was on me. And so, instead of rebuking me or trying to correct my doctrine that I was preaching, they gave me the right hand of fellowship and encouraged me in my ministry with the Gentiles." And he calls them the pillars here, James, Cephas, and John. Cephas is that name that Jesus gave to Simon, Simon Peter. Cephas means stone. Well, here it is in verse 9. "They were the pillars, and if the pillars of the apostles there in Jerusalem could endorse Paul's gospel, what effect might that have on the false teachers? Well, it was a rebuke to them, because here the highest authorities in the Christian faith, the chosen apostles of Jesus, were endorsing what Paul was preaching and how he was going about his ministry. I think Paul probably used this expression, those who were of high reputation or those who were of repute. I think he used that deliberately because his enemies were claiming that Paul didn't have a very good reputation, that he was not one of the apostles chosen by Jesus. Well, Paul's argument is that those who everyone regarded with great respect could add nothing to his message. This confirmed that he indeed had received the revelation from Christ. Paul had gone to Jerusalem to demonstrate that his gospel was no different from that of Peter's, and the apostles agreed. Neither of them, neither Peter nor Paul, preached the necessity of circumcision or the necessity of living by the laws of Moses in order to be saved. This expression, the right hand of fellowship which the apostles gave to Paul, was a vow of friendship and unity, That's the meaning it has. It was a sign of partnership, and that must have devastated the false brethren who had hoped, when they came to that meeting in Jerusalem, to discredit Paul's gospel. Well, that argument was settled, but the apostles wanted to be sure of something else. They had been taught by Jesus, and they wanted to make sure that Paul remembered something very special. It's in verse 10. Only they would have us remember the poor. That's what they urged on Paul. Take care of the poor. Make sure that you teach that Christians ought to help the poor. But Paul didn't need that instruction, for he adds in the last clause of verse 10, which very thing I was eager to do. Now this is all based on the great commandment of Jesus Christ. And it is, love one another as I have loved you. Now if there are Christians in the church, and they are your brethren, if they are Christians, then they are in the family of God, and we owe something to them. So often I find people telling such people that they love them, but the Bible never tells us to tell a needy person that you love him. It tells us to help him. They don't need words. They need love in action. And love manifests itself practically by helping those in need. Don't pray for the poor. Help the poor. Now, even this teaching has been misunderstood. There are people today who think they are serving God by their efforts worldwide to help the poor. God never made the Christian church the custodian of all the poor people in the world. But He did tell believers that they need to take care of their own. And if they don't take care of their own, they are worse than unbelievers. First of all, a Christian ought to take care of his own family members, his mother and father, brothers and sisters. If they're in need, then he ought to take care of them, and the church ought not to have that kind of a burden. Then he ought to go outside of his family, again, to help other Christians, because they are his spiritual family. Now, if there is opportunity, then, of course, we should help all men. The point is, there's a priority system. First the family, then the spiritual family, and then the rest of the world. Now keep in mind that Paul never started a fund drive to feed all the people in the world. He did participate in collecting money for the poor Christians. Ah, that's much different, and we read about that in Acts chapter 11. And when in Galatians chapter 2, verse 10, he said, which very thing I was eager to do, talking about remembering the poor. Here in Acts chapter 11, it tells us how he did that. It says, now in those days, prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch, and one of them named Agabus stood up and foretold by the Spirit that there would be a great famine over all the world. And this took place in the days of Claudius. And the disciples determined, everyone according to his ability, to send relief to the brethren who lived in Judea. Notice, there were many other people who were suffering from the famine, but they didn't feel that that was their responsibility. Let the unbelievers take care of the unbelievers. We will take care of the believers. They already are being persecuted, and the least we can do, the Christian said, is to help them. And in Judea particularly, the persecution was on. Christians were being hunted and persecuted and jailed. And so, it says, the disciples determined, everyone according to his ability, to send relief to the brethren who lived in Judea. And they did so, sending it to the elders by the hand of Barnabas and Saul. So they brought it to the elders. The church had elders. They were the pastors of the church. They were the administrators. And they took care of that money and distributed it according to the needs of the people. Now what's interesting here is that Paul and the disciples never asked the Christians to tithe their income in order to help the poor brethren in Judea. It says here, everyone according to his ability. The tithe of the Old Testament was never a part of the giving in the New Testament. The church did not recognize it as a valid means of giving. Christians are under grace and they have been set free from the law, so they ought not to reach back into the Old Testament to find a law on how they ought to give to the poor. It has always been, give what you want to give. The Lord loves a cheerful giver, not a tither. He loves one who wants to give. And when you give to the poor, you're giving to the Lord. At the end of the Galatian epistle, Paul refers to giving again. In verse 10 of chapter 6, he writes, "So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." That's in keeping with what Jesus said. He said, "The poor you will always have with you." The Christian, therefore, doesn't aim to solve the world's problems in regard to poverty, but he can solve the problems of need in the church. And that's in keeping with what John the Apostle wrote in 1 John chapter 3. In verse 17 he writes, "Whoever has this world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him?" Well, you know the answer to that. What is love? Love is doing good for another at your expense. And if you're going to love like God loved, then it will be sacrificial giving of oneself for the benefit of another. Now, earlier, I mentioned tithing. And there are many people today who are taught that tithing is the plan of God to raise money for the church. Well, tithing is restricted to the Old Testament. That was a part of the law. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians about raising money for the poor in chapter 16 of his first epistle, he didn't say anything about tithing. Listen to what he wrote. "Now concerning the contribution for the saints," those are Christians, "as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put up something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that contributions need not be made when I come. And when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter to carry your gift to Jerusalem." Never did any apostle tell any Christian that he ought to tithe, but the New Testament does teach this principle. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7, "Each one must do as he has made up his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." That's the principle of giving, and that's the principle that Paul followed in his ministry. Any Bible readers find the revelation of Jesus Christ to John the Apostle a very exciting book, but they also find it difficult. However, the Radio Bible Course can be of help in this regard. We have teaching tapes on the whole book of Revelation. Write today to the Radio Bible Course and ask for our teaching tapes brochure. It will tell you how to order Tapes on Revelation. Until tomorrow, this is Nick Calavoda reminding you that the word gospel means good news.
Our address is Radio Bible Courses, Post Office Box 14916, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70898. The website is rbcword.org.